It was a big week for apologies, and they all happened to come from one person, Richard Smith.
I'm truly and deeply sorry for what happened. I deeply apologize. Mistakes were made, for which, again, I deeply apologize.
I apologize for that, but that is what happened.
Okay, moving on.
Richard Smith was testifying before Congress because he is the now former CEO of Equifax, which informed us last month that basically all of us have been hacked.
The company announced that the information for almost 150 million Americans has been compromised. And I know you've heard this sort of thing before with other hacks, but this hack is different. Because for starters, you did not sign up for Equifax, which is one of the three major credit bureaus. And for basically your entire life, they have been slurping up and storing your most personal information.
Which means that Equifax, and maybe now the hackers, know my social security number and my address and the fact that I opened a Gap credit card and the fact that I missed a payment last month and the fact that I only paid $300 towards my Subaru Impreza instead of the $400 that I normally pay.
Times are tight.
They know everything.
150 million Americans looking over our shoulders for the rest of our lives, worried about someone filing our tax forms and taking our refunds.
My personal nightmare is somebody walking into Home Depot, opening up a credit card with my name on it, grabbing a giant orange shopping cart and filling it with drills and circular saws and shop vacs.
And getting 10% off the whole thing. That's what really bugs
me. It's my 10%.
My discount.
At any rate, it's bad, which was pointed out to Richard Smith by a lot of our elected representatives.
Talk about ham-handed responses. This is simply unacceptable.
Senior executives like you should be held personally accountable.
So here, in my last 13 seconds, I'm going to speak to America, and I'm going to say for the 145 million people, file a lawsuit. Otherwise, they're going to keep doing to you what they've been doing to you forever.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Robert Smith.
And I'm Kenny Malone. And this Equifax hack, it feels like a dystopian sci-fi future. We've got shadowy hackers roaming through our data in this central location that we didn't even sign up for, and it feels like such a modern-day problem.
And yet this whole mess goes back to one moment. A moment when two brothers in Brooklyn decided they were going to sell our private information to the world, and that we were not going to be the customers, we were going to be the product.
This happened 150 years ago, and people were asking themselves the same questions we are asking ourselves now. Who owns your information? Who has a right to see that information? And is there any limit on what someone is allowed to dig up on you?
It is quite the story. We'll have it after the break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from State Farm, who knows that many Americans struggle with their finances and most have never been taught how to manage them. Starting today, State Farm wants to change that by giving people the tools, help, and education they need to take control of their money, putting financial well-being within the reach of everyone. You can find out more at letstarttoday.com. State Farm, here to help life go right.
Hey, Nora.
Hi.
This is Robert.
Nice to meet you.
Show us the way to the secret documents.
We heard that one of the very first credit reports ever, precursor of this whole Equifax thing, was in the archives here at the New York Public Library. Nora Lyons helped us pull it out of storage, showed us to the famous Rose Reading Room, beautiful room at the top of the library, and a research coordinator named Rebecca walks in and gently holds this little blue booklet out to us.
I brought a pair of gloves. I didn't know if we would need them to touch.
No. No, you don't wear
it. It's not the Gutenberg Bible.
I thought
well,
it
you
was...
wouldn't you wouldn't wear gloves with the Gutenberg either.
Wait, really?
Because if it snags, it's going to rip the paper.
The front of this book says Retail Mercantile Agency, 1874.
It looks like a phone book.
There's a list of about 4,000 people who live in Brooklyn.
Back in the day.
And then next to each name is an address and then some old-timey job. Butchers, druggists.
So many grocers. And there was a sailor of some sort.
What's his name? It's Captain Collins.
Captain Collins always pays his debts. Gets an A.
Does it say that?
Just an A.
And sure enough, next to each name is a letter. A letter grade that tells us just how trustworthy Captain Collins was. So we flip to the front of the book.
Oh, look right here.
So this is the key.
And A means that the captain pays his debts right away. If there had been a B there, it would mean that he always paid in cash. Letter C would mean perhaps he didn't always pay his debts on time.
And then there's one final code, and it's an ampersand, or like the
and.
Like an and. Yeah. And it basically means we're not going to put this person's rating in this book. Come talk to us. There's some stuff you should probably know about this person.
We had some questions about how the book worked in real life in Brooklyn back in the day. So we went to an expert, Josh Lauer. He wrote a book.
My book is called Creditworthy, A History of Consumer Surveillance and Financial Identity in America.
You went for broke on that subtitle.
I did.
Josh explained to us that credit in the early 1800s, it was not what we think of today. It wasn't credit cards or auto loans because, like, obviously those did not exist back then.
What credit meant was a tab at your town store. So let's say that Robert Smith, you are a farmer and it's 1825. What crops are you growing,
Robert? Farm apples.
Apples, okay. So Robert goes into the grocery store to pick up whatever he needs, maybe like some butter, some cigars. And Robert tells the grocer,
yeah, I don't have any money. The apple crop hasn't come in yet. And so I'm going to need you to extend me some credit.
And I, as the grocer, I look at Robert and I say, oh, Mr. Smith, well, I know your uncle and I've known your father. And darn it, if I don't trust the Smiths more than I trust myself.
And he says, take your butter, take your cigars. I know you'll come back next week and you'll settle. And
good day, sir.
And good day.
And that system worked for a long time. But after the Civil War, people started moving around, heading to cities, especially Brooklyn, New York.
Give me a little sound effects from Brooklyn.
How about this? Extra, extra. Read all about it. Population of Brooklyn booming.
Love it.
Love it.
This created a problem. More strangers were showing up at the grocery store looking to buy things on credit, and the grocer needed to answer a pretty simple question. Will this person pay me back? I know nothing about him.
Enter the Sells brothers.
Herman and Conrad Sells, and there isn't a lot of evidence that survives about them and about who they are.
So for the purposes of this story, we can imagine them however we like. You know, handlebar mustaches, blue velvet vests.
Maybe some monocles, maybe pocket watches.
A jaunty cane.
Cane, yes, yes, the Sellses were Mr. Peanutses.
They were two Mr. Peanuts.
The Sells brothers were in Brooklyn in 1869, and they start going around to the butchers and the druggists and the tailors.
And saying, we're organizing a list of all customers in our neighborhood.
So it would be great, dear cobbler, if you would let me look at your books and find out who's in there, who pays cash, who uses credit, who pays back that credit. And that way, if a stranger named Robert Smith walks into my store, I would just pull out the Sells book.
Oh, yeah, look right here. Robert Smith, plumber, 1102 Lafayette Avenue, B.A. Always paying cash, always pay on time.
Robert Smith.
Smith motto.
Is that true?
That's no, no. The one thing that struck us when we looked at this little pamphlet is you can almost feel the Sells trying to be as careful as humanly possible to give the minimum amount of information. They're not judging people. They're not slandering them. They just put down the name, the job, and a simple little rating.
It was almost as if the Sells knew that if they were going to create an industry where people's information was the product, that maybe, like, just maybe, you should be careful with that information.
So we should note it says confidential on here.
Yeah. Which means, sitting here reading these names and these ratings, this is the equivalent of an 1874 Equifax hack.
We're hacking 18-something-something Brooklyn.
And leaking everybody's credit rating. The Sells idea was a huge success. It was obviously good for retailers who could lend more credit and sell more stuff.
And it was also good for people who wanted to buy things. People like my doppelganger from the 1800s, Bob Smith, the plumber. He could get credit almost anywhere because it said in a little book that he always paid his debts. And frankly, he could probably get a discount on the things he bought because he was not a risk.
These credit reports were such a big success that over the next century, thousands of credit bureaus were established all over the country. And like any competitive marketplace, these bureaus tried to have the best product, which in this case means that there was market pressure for more and more information.
Yeah, the Sells brothers just gave you a letter grade. But imagine some other credit agency says, well, you know, we have a bunch of personal information about Robert Smith the plumber. Don't you want to buy our book instead?
And so a lot of information ended up in people's credit files.
Marital status?
Marital status. Married men were
considered less risky, needed to remain upstanding and pay their debts.
Do I want to know medical conditions?
If you could know something about that.
If you have a broken foot and can't work, that'd be good to know. Might not pay back your debts.
What about vices? Drinking, gambling, philandering?
Absolutely. So
over time, credit bureaus realized that these dossiers, they weren't just useful for lenders. Insurance companies and employers might also like to see them. And so they kept growing and building their consumer reports.
Consumers sort of knew the information was being collected, but the full extent of this collection came out in 1966 because of an almost offhand comment in Washington, D.C.
What had happened was the Congress was holding a totally unrelated set of hearings. The Bureau of Labor Statistics and the U.S. Census Bureau were proposing a computerized centralized database.
And the representatives were losing their minds. I mean, this was Big Brother. This could not stand. So they held hearings. And during one of those hearings, a computer expert was testifying. And he was like, you guys are worried about collection and centralization of data. You do know that's already happening, right? With the credit bureaus?
And Congress was like, what? We need new hearings right now.
More hearings.
Let's do it. It actually took 2 years, but let's do it.
And the news coverage at the time, it could have come from this week.
In Washington, another day of hearing on the behavior of the credit bureaus who keep records on almost everyone.
And it is eerie to listen to these old hearings. Nothing has changed. They trot out a figurehead from one of these credit bureaus.
And we receive them courteously, and we discuss.
This Jimmy Stewart talking gentleman was an attorney for the Retail Credit Company. The Retail Credit Company was one of the largest bureaus at the time.
And this next piece of tape has no relevance, but just listen to how he talks.
Then I don't blame them. A bit, see?
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 See, at this hearing, what came out was this pretty damning copy of someone's credit report.
We have a copy of this because it was filed during the hearings. It's for a woman named Mary Wilson, and she was having trouble finding a job, she learned, because of what the Retail Credit Company put in this report. It says here that Mary is, quote, dominating,
peculiar,
and worst of all, quote, neurotic or psychotic.
And it does not say who said this about her. Maybe it was her neighbor or someone she worked with. For sure, we know it was not a doctor diagnosing her as psychotic. It was essentially a piece of hearsay.
The 1960 senators were outraged at the Retail Credit Company, but instead of apologizing,
what's wrong with hearsay?
The Retail Credit Company's lawyer dug in his heels.
Hearsay is bandied around in these hearings as though it was a dirty word, and it isn't.
I don't know. Congress seemed to think it was a dirty word because these hearings spawned the first major piece of legislation to finally regulate credit bureaus. It's called the Fair Credit Reporting Act of 1970.
That law and some of the amendments that would come later, they would effectively stop credit bureaus from collecting hearsay and rumors. They would allow consumers to see their own credit files. They would attempt to fix errors and to limit some of the reasons that people could pull your consumer report.
The credit reporting industry changed pretty quickly after this. Computers meant the data could be centralized and spread more easily, which meant you didn't need small regional bureaus in every town to collect gossip on people. The industry consolidated, it consolidated, it consolidated until eventually there were only three big credit reporting bureaus.
And Josh Lauer, our credit historian, says the Retail Credit Company took such a beating during these hearings and in the years to come that it decided to change its name to something more equal-sounding, more fact-based.
Equal and fact-based.
They changed their name to Equifax.
When we come back from the break, a new name, a new round of congressional hearings, and some new ideas on how to fix the industry, see?
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Swell Investing, an impact investing platform helping you invest in stocks that support clean water, fewer diseases, and renewable energy sources, while also investing in your financial future. Invest in progress at swellinvesting.com.
So to bring us up to the present, we know that Equifax got hacked, and we know it was much worse than what we did in the library to the Sells Brothers' Little Blue Book.
And we should say here that we reached out to Equifax and one of the major trade associations that represents them. They both declined to be interviewed, but we still had questions about what we are supposed to do now. Hey, Chi-Chi, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys fine.
All right, good. Qichi Wu is a consumer advocate. She's a lawyer at the National Consumer Law Center.
We've been telling everyone who will listen to us, freeze your credit report at all three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion.
Those are the big three credit bureaus. And a freeze basically means that no one is allowed to pull my credit report, not unless I temporarily lift the freeze for them. That way, if somebody tries to open a Gap card with my stolen information, Gap would go and try to check my credit, but they wouldn't be allowed because there's a freeze and the Gap application would be denied.
Now, here's the catch, and it depends on where you live, but this is something that credit bureaus typically charge you to do, to protect your own information.
And then the other thing is you're going to have to pay to temporarily lift or thaw the freeze when you do want credit. And so you have to pay again. Yeah.
Equifax, though, is already bowing to pressure on that. And they're saying that they're going to remove their fees, which seems like the very least that they could do.
But Qichi says this is the moment where everyone who has had a beef over the last few decades with the credit reporting industry is trying to change whatever it is they think is wrong with the system.
And there's a lot of beefs. For example, people would like to see a higher accuracy standard for the credit bureaus. They'd like to make it easier for people to change errors in their reports. And there's also a call to limit who is allowed to use your credit report to judge you. Qichi says this is true especially for employers.
With this sense that the credit report is some sort of proxy for how responsible someone is.
I think Robert Smith thinks that. I think if I had a bad credit score, Robert would think less of me. I'm just looking across the table from him right now, and he's...
I kind of would. Just pay the bills on time.
But you shouldn't, because it could have been because something bad happened to Kenny, right?
Yeah, Robert.
There's a lot of folks who miss payments or default because they lose their job, they get sick, they get divorced, you know, there's a death in the family. A lot of times bad credit is the result of bad luck.
This seems to be sort of dancing around the core issue. Why not just pass a law that says they can't have my credit information unless I say yes?
Well, that would certainly give consumers a measure of control. Now, how effective that would be, I'm not sure, because in order for you to get credit, you'd probably end up having to agree to this.
You can never leave. They keep pulling you back in.
We're captives. We're the product. We're the asset.
In other words, we are not and have never been the customers.
Hearing the story makes me think that, like, the Sells brothers in the 1800s really did decide the direction of the entire industry. Because, you know, they could have provided letters of credit to people like Robert Smith, the plumber, back in the 1800s. They could have provided a little laminated, if you could laminate things. They could have provided a little framed letter that said, this person is worthy of credit. And that way, the customer would keep control of their own information. But they decided not to do it that way. They decided that the money was in the businesses were willing to pay. So ever since then, you and me and regular consumers have had no say.
So let's all go freeze our credit.
Welcome to the Equifax Automated Security Freeze System. This automated system will allow you to place or permanently remove a security freeze from your Equifax credit file.
Who did they hire
that? That is someone from inside Equifax. They're like, we need you to sound like the movie guy.
Yeah, the toughest voice you have, because we got to look tough in these troubling times. Let us know what you thought of the program. Our email address is planetmoney@npr.org, or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook, even Instagram.
Today's show was produced by Nick Fountain. Planet Money's supervising producer is Alex Goldmark. Brian Erstadt edits the show. Thanks this week to Chris Hufnagel and James Rule, who spent a lot of time explaining the Fair Credit Reporting Act to me. And a special thanks to the New York Public Library for letting us in and letting us be loud.
How much time do we have to still yell in the great reading room?
You have, I'm going to say, 12 minutes.
Great.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money.
I'm Kenny Malone.
And I am Robert Smith.
Thanks for listening.
It is a shrine, a palace, a Vatican, Sistine Chapel to books.